everyone. Welcome to our broadcast, the UFO Files from Sunset Station Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Kurt Main is here with me, and Kurt is an experiencer. Kurt has had abduction experiences since early in his life when he lived up in the San Francisco Bay Area, over in the East Bay, in Piedmont, and also in Oakland. Kurt is still having these experiences, and he worries that maybe his family is also involved. His 12-year-old daughter recently told him of a horrific dream about lava everywhere, something that looked like Hoover Dam. She couldn't tell for sure. Metal ankle bracelet burning her foot. Kurt had a similar dream himself just before the tsunami, and Kurt's concerned. And in, if you listen to the interview, I'm sure you'll understand why. This is a rare glimpse into the hell many people go through who fear or believe or know that they've been abducted. One of the things on this broadcast you'll notice is Kurt has had lots of paranormal experiences as well as experiences dealing with UFOs. As Larry Dickin, our executive producer, has said many times on our UFO Files broadcast, he feels they're all related somehow. Let's sit back and talk to Kurt Main. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Well, you know, we finally meet. This is great.
Yes, wonderful. It's been outstanding.
Well, and we've been doing a little emailing back and forth. And, you know, Kurt, you have some very, very interesting things that have happened to you. Some of them are downright scary.
Some of them are extremely scary. As a matter of fact, I'd say most of them are pretty scary.
I've been thinking about it. I guess maybe we need to start back there in 72?
It's around somewhere between 72 and 75 is what I'm going to recall as the date of the so-called textbook abduction.
And let's talk about that first, and then I want to get into some other things. You have night terror, night sweats, whatever.
Yeah, I get the night terrors. Yeah, those are real enjoyable.
Have one of those recently, I think.
I had one of those last night, as a matter of fact. They're nowhere like they used to be. It used to be I would get them once a week at least for almost 20 years, and now maybe once a month.
Now, for our audience, you know, lots of people haven't experienced anything like that. I guess they've had nightmares, perhaps. That's probably the most similar thing you could talk about, but it's a little worse than that. So a nightmare in three dimension, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. A night terror versus a nightmare is like, well, it's almost like watching a Twilight Zone episode versus the most horrific horror movie you could see in a theater with the blood and guts and old details. A night terror just literally terrifies you down to your core, where you don't know what to do. It's you're so scared, it's almost unbelievable. It's like somebody's holding a gun to your head.
And you feel it in every part of your body.
Every single inch.
Not just like watching a movie.
No, every single inch. You're terrified.
Do you remember why these terrors happen? I mean, are there different episodes or the same type episode, or is it just, you know, you're scared as hell?
They can be different episodes. Usually it's somebody after me, a bug with big eyes chasing after me, or just a bug in general. I had one a while back. It was usually something like a spider, but it wasn't a spider. Kind of a cross between a spider and a scorpion kind of being that was acting all playful with me, then all of a sudden leapt at me, and I woke up just as it was starting to get to my face. And these things are just, they're horrible.
Well, let me ask you about phobias. Were you afraid of insects to begin with?
No, never. No. And I'm still not, that's an odd thing, I'm not at all scared of insects. I'm still not in a waking state. You know, I'm the guy, just last night we had a spider, and I'm the guy who takes it outside and saves it instead of squishing it.
You know, that's kind of like me, too.
I'm not at all scared of insects at all.
Well, now, when you're talking about the bugs, you're talking about, I imagine, human-sized bugs.
No, not all.
Okay,
these could be pint-sized little buggers. Now, when I'm, like last night's stream, for instance, I can be in a house that's usually dimly lit, and I just feel there's this presence there. It's definitely not a bug, but it's just, it's pure evil. And I have had instances where I've seen what appears to be a human body, where I had one instance where I was in this home, and I walked up these stairs and went in this room, and there was a person sitting behind a chair that just looked at me, and it was more, I guess, demonic than anything.
Now, you've had some demonic experiences, and we'll talk about those in a little bit, but I think probably not you yourself having the demonic, but you've ran across people that appear to be devilish.
Yeah, and I myself have had some pretty demonic experiences. I was talking to Rod Davis the other day on the phone and mentioned a couple of instances where I've had where he just flat out felt like I was dealing with the devil, even though I don't necessarily believe there is a devil per se, but I do believe there's the dark side.
And this definitely was representative of the evil.
Yeah.
Curiosity is getting the best of me on that. What do they do? Do they say things? Do they have strange voices or what?
No, not necessarily. The instances where I've had where I've been around something that I thought was pure evil. The first instance was a long time ago. I was in high school, of all things, and I went on a double date to San Francisco. And this was before my instance, even the abduction in the 70s. This was before that. I walked into a store in North Beach in San Francisco, and I walked into the middle of this store, and I was just totally oblivious. All I was doing was I and my girlfriend, and I walked into the middle of the store, and I just felt such pure evil. The only word to describe it was just pure exorcist-type evil. I looked at her, and I said, I got to get out of here, and I ran out the front door. Turns out it was a store that sold demonic items. That's what they sold.
Basically, and this is important, folks, as we get into the show here, you have a sensitive or a sensor, I guess, really, to evil things. I mean, I believe from visiting with you in the coffee shop before we came out to do the studio.
Yeah, I do. Something else I'll talk about, which we never mentioned over there, is a long time ago, and I'm not exactly sure when, I'd probably say maybe late 60s, I was standing in the front room of my home in Oakland. The rest of my family was in the other part of the house, and all of a sudden from above, I heard what sounded like angels singing. And bear in mind, I was raised in a bad part of Oakland. There weren't many angels outside.
And well, they weren't regular angels. It might have been Hell's Angels.
Might have been Hell's Angels. They may have been where I lived. And from up above, to this day, when I hear, like, I don't know, operatic or choral music, I still get all teared up. I could still hear it like it was yesterday, and it sounded like a chorus of angels above me, and it lasted for about a minute.
You didn't see anything, though?
No, there was nothing. I looked outside the window. There was nobody outside, and it was clear as a bell, and it was right. It was above me. It wasn't from outside. It was coming from above.
Let's talk about this textbook abduction.
Okay, well, that one happened in probably early to mid-70s. And on this particular evening, it was a summer in East Oakland. And I was living at home with my mom. My mom was in the back of the house, and I was in the front of the house. And I awoke at some point in the middle of the night for argumentative points, let's say around 3 a.m. I woke up with the sound. We lived next door to an apartment complex, and right outside the window, we had open because it was summertime, I had the window open, and right outside there's a walkway between our house and the apartment complex. And I woke up hearing the sound of cats howling, only it was this eerie sound, of like it was miles away, and it's just this bizarre sound that sounded like cats. And we did have cats, so I just assumed, it's cats fighting. So I leaned out the window and hissed and kind of clapped my hands, and all of a sudden, stone cold silence, they stopped. And I stood up, and instead of doing the normal thing, which is climbing back into bed and going back to sleep, I walked outside, opened the door. I can still remember everything like it was yesterday to a certain point. Walked, opened the door from my bedroom, walked outside, at which point I was in the front room. I looked out the house into the backyard. We had a pane glass door that led out into the backyard, and I saw all these like shimmering electrical sparks all in around the window. There was like there were six frames to the back, and there's all these electrical sparks that appeared to be emanating right outside the window. And I looked at this, and I started pinching myself. I looked next door to my neighbor on the other side, and their lights were always on 24/7. And I looked, and I'm telling myself, I'm awake. I pinched myself. I slapped myself in the face, literally, to tell myself, I'm awake. I'm really seeing this. And I looked back outside. The next thing I remember for, 20 years of my life almost, was standing in front of my bed. I don't remember going back in the bedroom, even though to this point I can remember everything like it was yesterday. I'm standing at the foot of my bed. I turned the clock next to my bed sideways, and I had the wherewithal to do that, and I remember thinking when I turned it, I'm doing this so in the morning I'm going to see this clock sideways and I'm going to know this really happened, even though I had no clue what it was that happened. I climbed back in the bed. Bear in mind, I felt normal. I wasn't scared at all. Climbed back into bed. Certain amount of time elapsed, and I had the most horrible nightmare, the first in a series of events. In this dream, I walk outside my house, open the door, and we had a palm tree outside in our front yard, and this palm tree is blowing hysterically, and I have this horrible feeling that we've blown each other up. I was the only person left alive on planet Earth. And I woke up. Now I was terrified. I was in a cold sweat, and I, bang, just like that, went back to sleep. Woke up in the morning, just kind of buried what happened that night. But then that night we had a family dinner, a gathering of most of my family. They came over that evening, and I told everybody what happened. And they all said, that was a dream, Kurt. That had to be a dream. I'm going, no, it wasn't a dream. I know it wasn't a dream. And they all were so insistent on telling me that that was a dream that I just kind of buried it. I didn't talk about it. I didn't talk about it for years, actually. But within months of this happening, I started having these horrible night terrors. And I was terrified of the dark, absolutely scared to death of the dark, until I started doing aggression 20 years later, literally, and the fear got worse and worse as I got older. One night I remember my mom knocking on the door because a friend of mine called on the phone, and I was sitting there with headphones on. I was rocking out to some music, and my mom's knocking on the door, and I didn't hear, and she reaches in and hits light switch. Well, I looked up, and I saw this arm trying to turn on the lights. I see the lights flipping on and off. I throw the headphones off my head. I jump out of bed. I open the door, and my mom there, who's a relatively short woman, is standing in front of me, and I'm telling her, I'm going to kill you. I said, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. And she's saying, Kurt, it's me. Kurt, it's me. It's me. It's your mom. And I'm just telling her, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. You're never going to do that to me again. I'm going to kill you. And finally, I calmed down, and I hugged her. I said, oh, God, I'm so sorry. And she said, what was that? And I couldn't explain it. Then I went on the phone, and of course my friend on the other end was just terrified. He said, what in the hell went on there? He said, we were convinced your mom found you dead. We're hearing this screaming and yelling. And that was just the beginning of a long, long period. If I hear to this day, if my kids wake me up by tapping me, or if there's a noise in the house, I wake up and I yell right away. And that continues to this day.
Something's still chasing you.
Something's still after me. Anyway, for most of my life, that's all I remembered that night, even though I tried over and over and over and over. Believe it or not, a day didn't go by most of my life that I didn't go back at some point and try to figure out what happened. I know something happened, because my life just took from a straight path, my life took a sharp left from that night on. If I had to say for certain what night, you know, changed my life, where my life took a left turn instead of continuing on the path I was on, that was it. My grades in school were never outstanding. They dipped from there on out. I was without focus for a vast majority of my life. But this isn't just me. This is a lot of people that have.
Now, how did you come about to learn about regression and all of that? Because you did go through that, right?
Yes, I did. I married a woman some years later, and the memories seemed to be starting to surface. And slowly but surely, everything was getting worse. And I remember one night I was standing in the front room of our home we owned in Oakland, and the cars would drive down the street because we lived on a busy street. And I remember we had a pane glass window. Excuse me. We had this pane glass window. And in the window I saw lights sparkling just from the cars coming down the street. There was nothing supernatural about this. And it reminded me so much of what I saw, I literally froze. And I told my wife, I'd shut off a movie we were watching. She went to bed, and I told her, I'll be right there. And I saw this, and I just froze. I couldn't move. Tears started coming down my cheeks. She comes out, and she says, what's the matter? And I just snapped back, and I said, I'm sorry. And I said, I just saw something that reminded me of that night. And she said, that's it. She said, we've got to do something about this. This is ridiculous. You're getting worse and worse. So as my birthday present, something she lived to regret, she sent me to a therapist. The first one I went to was a little too new agey for my liking, but she did do regression. And it didn't take long to one of my first memories was I was in the Oakland Hills with beings walking on this trail in the hills of Oakland.
Do you remember what the beings looked like?
They looked like rays. And there was two walking and one actually levitating in front of me and leading me onto a craft that was in this meadow. And there is a meadow that looked just like this huge meadow in the Oakland Hills. And I had since found out that there's been a lot of people who have experienced things in the Oakland Hills. It's a pretty remote area, even though it's in the middle of on the outskirts of a huge city. And that was one of the first memories that came up. And I remember coming home to my wife, and she could be a little sarcastic. And I came home, and she says, well, did you see aliens? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, yeah, I did. And she said, oh, shit. She said, oh, great. And she shook her head, and she knew that our life together would never be the same. And I started doing more and more and more and more and more regression until I finally came upon a gentleman in Sacramento who regressed me, and no matter how many regressions I did, I couldn't go back. I kept seeing what would look like a granite wall when I went back to my textbook abduction, where the last thing I remember was standing in front of the bed. I kept trying to dig that one out because I thought, well, maybe this is probably a big part of my terrors and everything. And finally, with this gentleman, I was able to go back and... bear in mind, things that come up through regression that I don't consciously remember, I do hold under a different light of skepticism for myself. I don't necessarily, I'll be honest, I don't necessarily 100% believe the things that come up through regression. Because
in other words, you think there may be some psychological tricks.
Sure.
But at the same time, you keep coming back to the same thing. So
yeah, I do keep coming back to the same thing. And I've done a lot of research on it. And I know a lot of the things I experienced, some of it knows this, supposedly do hold the textbook of, however you want to word it, of being real, the things that I recall. That generally people don't see these things, and I see things that aren't verbatim aliens or whatever. Anyway, going back to what happened to me in the 70s, I finally was able to go back there, and as I was standing in the front room and looked out the window and saw these shimmering lights, I walked back to the back of the house, because also my mom and I were extremely close. And my mom was in the back of the house, and this was the thing that rang true to me all these years, was that, you know, if I saw something back there, I'm sure as heck not going to climb back in the bed and leave this thing next to my mom's bedroom just oh well, and go back to bed. I knew there had to be so much more to this that they couldn't have just stopped right there. But through regression, I walked through the back of the house, stood in front of this door. I actually went through the door. Yeah. Myself went through the door. Without it opening. Stood on the back step, and there was a stairway that went down, and I'm engulfed in all these lights, and they're almost like stung you when they touched you. I looked down the stair, and near the top of the stairs was this being that looked almost like a pillowy shape, and it was orangish, greenish color. It didn't look at all like anything that we've seen in any of our textbook aliens. It had what looked like two black dots that may or may not have been eyes. This was more substance than matter, I guess. Told me his name was Catfish, although I don't get a he or she feeling, but told me his name was Catfish. Now, bear in mind, I was a huge Oakland A's fan, and my favorite Oakland A was a pitcher named Catfish Hunter. And I do believe these beings can climb into your mind and find a comfort level to make you feel like it's okay. Followed him down the stairs into my backyard. We got a big backyard. It was, several people referred to it as a park almost. I stood in this area with him and looked above us, and there was a craft, and we were stood in a warm light. I could still feel this incredible warm light shining down.
In other words, it was comforting more than being hot or something.
Yes, it was comforting more than being hot. And this being, who I have to tell you, that whereas I don't necessarily take a New Age stance on this stuff, this particular being, to this day, I have incredible love for, even though it really didn't change my life for the better. It taught me some lessons, and I'm positive to this day I don't know everything that I was told by this, and I'd love to be able to go back there again and possibly dig up more things. But as I was going down the stairs, I kept seeing these visions. I saw a vision of something that looked like a huge pyramid-shaped object with a halo around it. It kind of looks like the Anaheim Stadium where the Angels play. It kind of looks like the big A they have there with the halo above it. I heard bombs exploding in the background, and this is as I was going down to have this conversation with this being. We went down there. He told me that what the impression that he, it was more than telling me, it was like it was stamped on my soul that we were all one, that there's no difference between any of us, whether you're Asian or Caucasian or whatever, black, it doesn't make any difference, we're all the same being. And all out of the same shell, so to speak. And to this day, if I had to say what my biggest gift was in life, it was being able to go from culture to culture and being accepted in ways that are hard to explain. I was raised in a bad area, but I can go into the worst area, the meanest of streets, and I've never had a problem, not one. And I've gone into some areas that would make most people's blood curdle. And I'd be the only white person there. And I've never had a single problem. I'm accepted as if I'm in a black area, it's almost as if I'm black. If I'm in an Asian area, it's almost as if I'm Asian. It's like I send out this incredible energy. And I think at least I attribute it to Catfish.
And now what else do you remember about Catfish?
Told me we would meet again in the future.
Have you?
I don't know. I really don't know. I do know that I had an abduction episode when I was remarried, fast forwarding 10 years at least. Oh, no, from that to the 70s, excuse me. We're fast forwarding 30 years, almost the better part of 30 years. I was laying in bed. This was in Piedmont, California, which isn't that far from where I was raised, and I was laying in bed, and I heard this loud, almost like engine sound in the backyard. I leaned back, and I saw this bright light, and that's the last thing I recalled. The next thing I remember was my daughter crying, and I got up and comforted her. My wife, who was soon to become my ex-wife, commented on how she woke up and was literally frozen and couldn't move and was just terrified and wondered where I was. And the memory that, and anyway, I did regression on that because I was a basket case for days. And when this happens to me, my nerves are usually totally shot. I'm not even the same person. I'm pretty gone.
Yeah, and you mentioned also that your life always takes a downward turn, at least financially.
Always does. Yeah, it always takes a downward turn financially, emotionally, in most things. And the funny thing is, I'm at the point now where I kind of realize this, but it's almost like I can't stop it. It sends me on a self-destructive path, and I wish to the world I could change that. And I'm trying to work on that, but it still doesn't seem to be almost possible. It's one of those things I can't explain. But after this abduction, the second time, or not the second abduction, the second really major one, I'd probably say, after doing regression, I was almost, as bizarre as it sounds, liquefied out of my bed, and I found myself on a ship. Behind me were almost like pews of a church, but they weren't exactly, but it was almost like that. I was at this altar-like place with bright, beautiful lavender-like lights. In the background were grays scurrying about just like ants, and I was sitting there in front of this menacing-like being who had these small eyes that were just dark as the ace of spades. They were just these, and he looked almost like a werewolf. He had this leather type skin, and all I can recall was being berated from him for not doing what I was supposed to be doing.
What was it that you were supposed to be doing?
I haven't the foggiest. And I've gotten this message a number of times. If I had to put my finger on what I'm supposed to do, it's, amongst other things, help abductees, but more than anything, it's race relations. That's what I was supposed to be doing.
Interesting. You know, we talk about you had more than one incident in which you remember a demon-like character, like you call this guy a werewolf almost. Why don't you tell a little bit about those stories? You've had some incidents where people are there, demonic, and then they're gone.
Yeah, I've had, well, since we moved out here to lovely Las Vegas, and actually we live in Henderson, which is next to lovely Las Vegas, and I shouldn't say that, because it sounds sarcastic in this part.
Well, no, if you've ever been in Las Vegas long enough, it's a love hate deal.
Yeah, it's a very interesting place. But the first incident was me and my daughters were walking to our storage unit in the apartment we're living in, and I saw a woman sitting with her feet in the pool, and I saw more of a silhouette, but there was no doubt it was a long-haired woman with her feet in the pool. This is in winter time, and it's cold in winter. As much as it's hotter than you know where in the summer, it's colder than
two in the winter.
And I walked by this, and I see this woman with her feet in the pool. I told my daughters, I said, "Oh my God, that's one brave woman." And my kids said, "What, Dad?" And we looked back, we passed a bush, and we looked back, and the only thing in this pool now was a black cat walking around the perimeter of the pool. And I'd swear on my deathbed what I saw.
Wow, the woman changes into a black cat. Things of movies.
So it appears. A lot of my stuff is things of movies.
All kidding aside, these fiction writers got these ideas somewhere.
Yeah, they did. They did.
They always seem to play back and forth.
Whether it's from our collective consciousness.
Right, over which we were trying to think of earlier. And Larry Dickin, our producer, I talked to about that last night, as a matter of fact. And there's something about collective consciousness, but there's evil we all recognize.
Yes, there is. And so much stuff that's in the horror movies is somehow taken from reality.
We've talked about this with many guests, and I haven't mentioned it to you, but it seems to me that a lot of times you identify something as poltergeist or whatever simply because that's what we're familiar with, and it could be an alien presence.
It's so hard to tell. I mean, I've jumping to another story of along the horror movie genre, this was a dream I had a long time ago. I'd say actually not that long, about 7 years ago. In this dream, I'm in this New Age type store. It's actually a Native American store. And I'm looking at jewelry in a counter with a striking Native American woman, just gorgeous, behind the counter. And I'm asking her, how much is that? And the next thing I know is this bat, vampire-type bat, comes flying at my throat in the dream. And because a lot of my dreams are like this. Everything's wonderful, everything's peachy keen, and then all of a sudden, in comes the dark side. And this bat comes throwing, running at my throat, and I wake up and like, in just pretty scared, because it was very, these things are so real. I got up, and I went into the restroom, my bathroom, and I spit out a mouthful of blood. My whole mouth was full of blood. And I'm going, and it was just like, oh my God. And as soon as I spit out all the blood, it was all gone. There was no tooth, there was no nothing. There was nothing causing any blood. Yet I had an entire mouthful of blood. And this is after the dream with the vampires.
You talk a little bit about this first experience and the second experience, and you feel how many, are we going to call these contacts, or are we going to call them abductions? What are we going to call these things?
I just don't know. I really don't. I call them abductions for want of another word, and I really don't like using that word, but I guess contact is probably more of anything, but in my instance, I've had such a mixed bag. I mean, I've had the textbook on the ship encounters.
The ship, we didn't get into that. Was it the circular type ship that we normally think of? Or was it a high tech, or what was it like?
I would say more high tech. But from that memory, that's all I can recall. Now another memory of the another ship memory, which was just horrifying. I did a radio show a few years back in the Bay Area on a pretty major station, and the man that was going to go on the show with me, along with another gentleman who's pretty well known, actually ghost hunter. I'm not going to say his name right now. The three of us did the show together. And he was a therapist also, and he said, well, I'd love to abduct you. How's that for a slip of tongue? I'd love to regress you before we do the show. I said, well, that's a little unusual. I said, but all right, sure. So I went over to his place in Marin County, and he regressed me and was able to get me into a state not very few actually were. I went way down with him, and I had a memory of being in almost a coffin-like object. Only it was clear top.
Yeah, you told me the story on the phone. I mean, this evil being was over you in this glass coffin, but it was open, and he reached his hand in, and it was a scary hand, if I remember right. It had long fingernails, really kind of points, really. And he was within a hundredth of an inch of your face, or maybe rubbing you gently, but looking anything but gentle, as he said, I'm going to teach you what fear is really all about.
Almost like, for want of another word, a Freddy Krueger. And for those of you who've got kids and get to see Nightmare on Elm Street every night, almost like that. Sharp, pointed claws that he's put up to my face in no intention of hurting me. For what I can tell so far, I've never actually been physically hurt. The only thing I've ever had that I...
But he said, this is what fear is like.
This is what fear is like.
And you agree.
I agree. It was very scary.
And he took the CD and he put it up on this wall, for lack of a better term, mausoleum type thing, where you got the feeling there are other people in other boxes.
That they were, yeah. Or at least their lives or records of them. Because whereas I feel I probably have more contact than most people, I'm only one of millions that this has happened to.
You don't know what happened because you woke up screaming, I guess, as usual, when these things get to the point where even under hypnotism, you can't stand it.
No, you can't. It snaps you out. And a lot of the stuff I've had under hypnosis hasn't really been that scary that it's snapped me out. This is one of the few, actually, that did. And I believe that is... It's possibly that's the last time I did hypnosis. I wouldn't mind doing it again with a qualified person. I'm pretty picky who I do it with. That's why I didn't really want to do it with him, because I didn't know him that well. Because you have to be really careful. And this is something I warn other people who think about doing this. You be really careful who you do it with, because they can lead you down the path they want to lead you down. And especially in the case of a lot of researchers, you know, they have their own...
they have their own idea, their own pet deal. They'll do anything to prove their point.
They'll do anything to prove their point. They have their agenda, and you have to be really careful who you do these things with.
Well, now, you made a living in gaming for a long time. Do you have some hidden talent given to you?
It's possible. It is possible, especially when it comes to poker playing. I've off and on made my living playing poker for years, and I've read one small article on poker. And you run into most of these professionals, and they've read every book, they've done this, they've done that, where I've pretty much done nothing. And whether that's a gift, or whether that's part of the process, I honestly don't know.
You know, the reason I ask that is, I know you're thinking about writing this story.
Yes, I'd love to make this into a book, or...
And we've just scratched the surface here tonight. There's lots of things that we haven't talked about. It's a screen actor's or a screenwriter's dream, or a producer's dream, what you've lived through, even though it's been horrific for you.
Yeah, it is.
Before we go, you got to tell that story about the person at Burger King or someplace.
Okay, the first one was the young lady on the edge of the pool.
Yeah, we talked about
vanished. The second one was a gentleman walking across the street near my house who was walking directly into crowded traffic, and a car passed me. I looked up and he was gone, and there was nowhere he could have gone, literally. The third one was a woman in Western gear, looked straight out of the Wild West in my complex, and I saw her walk out of a car area that didn't make any sense, and next thing you know, she was gone. The last one was the most bizarre of all, was a man. I was standing in line at Burger King, of all places. Should I mention Burger King? I was standing...
It's fine. We'll let them know that we're plugging them.
Yeah, it might not be good PR for Burger King. I was standing behind this gentleman in line, and he was just a middle-aged white man in gray sweats, gray pants, gray top, and just a run-of-the-mill guy. And I noticed the cashier acted just terrified, like it was John Gotti he was waiting on or something, just absolutely terrified. And as he moved out of the way, I moved up to the front of the line. And he came back and looked at me, this person, and I looked in his eyes, and it just was the most horrible set of eyes. They were almost totally black, and just a demon-like feel to this person. And he came back to the line and said something to the cashier, and I got back in line and placed my order. I turned to the side, and bear in mind it took seconds to put the order in. I turned to the side, and he was gone, whereas normally they're just standing there waiting for their meal, and he was gone. I looked throughout the entire Burger King. I looked in the parking lot. I looked everywhere, and he was nowhere to be found. I was so shook up. I sat down with my kids, and we ate our meal. And my kids even said, "Dad, what's the matter?" And I told them. I said, "I might have seen another." I ended up calling vanishing people. I said, "I've seen another vanishing person." And I explained the situation. And the blunder was I didn't go up and ask the cashier or anybody up there, did that guy pick up his meal? I didn't do that. I was so distraught. And that's the last person. That was a couple of years ago. That's the last person that I've seen and not seen.
No disappearing people tonight, thank goodness. I would kind of want to make it back.
yeah, you want to make it back? I want, please. Please. No, I haven't had any. I had those four. And I had the and the funny thing is, when I saw this gentleman with the gentleman, quote unquote, with these beady little eyes, I had the distinct feeling that you're the last one I'm going to see. I had a feeling that he was it. That was the last of the vanishing breed for me. And
I have a hunch that all ties in, but I'm not quite sure how. With the person saying or entity saying, "You don't know fear till you've seen this," and now you've taken back up the cross to bear to start talking about this.
Yeah, Yeah, let's hope this continues.
So maybe you had a good side and a bad side, or good angel, bad angel, or whatever.
I have had good angel, bad angel, so to speak. The being that, you know, stamped upon my soul, more or less, the racial feelings, that certainly couldn't be called bad. Yet on the other hand, I have had the flip side.
Yep.
That's why a number of times I've told people, I said, I don't know if I'm in touch with the angels or the devil, and I still don't.
Now, we've got about 30 seconds left. What would you advise other people? You said yourself, millions have had abduction experiences probably. What should they do?
Well,
from your perspective.
They're certainly free to contact me on my email. You can put that up, and I'm willing to talk to anybody that needs help. What I recommend to most people, and this is not an easy thing to do, seek out others like yourself, which is not easy to do. If you can get in a support group, that's outstanding, because that's one of the things I did. And if you can do regression, if you think that's what you need, then that's also ideal. But even in that, that's a double-edged sword, because if you get to the wrong person, you can probably
damage yourself more than help yourself.
I'd say you can make it worse than you can better. I've been fortunate that I feel that most of the people I've done regression with have been good people. But that all comes to a matter of research. And, you know, check out the people you go to before you go to them. But I think more than anything, if you can find others your own that are like you, that's real important. Because we can help each other a lot more than the researcher can, and not to knock researchers, but I think we can help each other much more than a researcher can, than a therapist can.
Kurt Main, what are you going to call your book? You got a title yet?
I don't know. I've had a couple. Dancing on a Volcano, I thought of.
that's neat.
Yeah, that's one I thought of. It's actually the title of an old Genesis song. But I saw that and I thought, you know, that's kind of fitting. I kind of do live a life that's kind of dancing on a volcano. I never know it's going to come out.
We wish you luck, and you're dealing with this pretty well, I think.
Usually. If you haven't seen me days after it happens. Days after it happens, there's no mistake. I'm usually not at my best.
We'll be in contact with you from time to time. Thanks very much, Kurt Main.
Well, thank you and bless you.
Mike, the show's not over. We have something to add. We talked to Kurt on the telephone, and this is kind of an example of the things from the supernatural that are happening to Kurt Main. He claims that this appeared on his answering machine. He believes it's a voice from the dead. In fact, he believes it might be his pet parakeet screaming out, saying, "I'm sick, help me," the day before the parakeet was found, dead in his cage with his eyes laying on the newspaper on the floor. Listen.
Soon after this message, you looked in the bird cage, and the bird was dead with the eyes out.
The next day, the bird flat down the bottom of the cage, laying down there. And my daughter described it. Little black holes where the eyes are, and down there at the bottom of the cage is the eye. And I mean, it's one incredibly bizarre story. I mean, it's like if somebody told me this, I'd never believe it. I wouldn't. I'd tell them you've been watching too many Twilight Zone episodes. I really would. I mean, that's true. Gruesome, I'd take lie detector test. I'd do anything. Everything I tell is 100% the truth.
Kurt's 12-year-old daughter, Cleo, had this to say about it.
Hello.
Yeah, I wanted to know about the bird when you found it the next day.
It was laying at the bottom. You mean when it was dead?
Yeah.
It was laying at the bottom of the cage with its head, like, down, And a little bit later, I was like, you know, trying to see if there's any blood on it or anything. So I got a tissue, put it on my hand, and flipped it over, and I saw there's no eyes. Looked at the cage, and there they were.
Just laying there.
Yep.
Not connected to anything.
No, just laying there.
And the sockets were empty.
Yep, completely.
Wow.
Well, okay, that was weird.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate you telling me about it. And okay, well,
she's a ringer in her young life, so she's been through a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you guys go for right now. But
okay, buddy. Well, thank you so much for calling late.
Okay.
Take care of that. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.